they need to want to be helped. Okay, I can't do it under. As good as I am, I can't sort of put them under and go, you will get better, like it or not. So if you fill that in, the other thing that it provides is if you put an email address on that I can read, so I can type it in, because quite often people write it and I just can't put it in the computer, you get a copy of the talk today. So although I cover a lot of ground, you then get a chance to listen to it again, and if you like certain bits, then you can go over it and just fully get the message from it. Okay? If because there's not many of you in the audience, I will notice if anybody looks lost at any point, and I'll try and clarify what I'm talking about. It's about life in general, really, and it's called Escaping the Past today, which is one of the main topic areas I deal with. I do tend to work on a flow. You'll notice I haven't got notes or anything, so I just go for it. If you suddenly interrupt me in that flow, I will forget where I am. If you're sort of like, oh, this is really confusing me, or you'd like to ask a question, if you just indicate, just put your hand up for a moment, that'll give me a chance to finish what I'm saying and try and remember where I'm going, or I might even tell Trudy where I'm going, and then I can come back to it. So if you want to, if you desperately want to ask something, please do so. Okay, if you can wait till the end, just leave it till the end and I'll answer as many questions as I can. Okay, right, so I'm Stephen Blake, I'm a therapist. I mainly help people with anxiety issues, and I now do some other work. There's a thing called Access Conscious Bars, which is we're giving taster sessions today, or full sessions. And that is about touching points on your head that release certain things that you're holding on to. And when we have anything messed up in our life, particularly something that's always in the background, like an anxiety or something, it's because we're holding on to something that's way in the past. And the strange thing is that when we think of this thing that happened to us, if we can remember what it is, we actually treat it as though it was yesterday. So if you've got something in your past, I just want you to think of it now and just see if it's a fresh memory or whether it relates to really how old it is. And if it's fresh in your mind, then that's the issue that you've got a problem with, because you're constantly going back to it, you're refreshing the memory. And my belief in that is that if we keep going back to a memory to refresh it, it's to try and say to us, look, that really hurt. And if I forget it hurt, I might trip over it again. Right. But if I keep hurting myself, I keep, you know, if you have a cut on your arm and it heals up, you'll forget what cut it. But if you pick the scab off every day, you'll be well aware what did it. And because you pick the scab off every day, it's fresh in your mind. And so you won't fall over that thing again. Okay? And that's what we're doing. So I need to start off with explaining about, although you've got one brain, you've got two minds. Right. So when people say I'm in two minds for this, they really are. So one is your conscious mind, and if we just call that the awareness bit. So anything you're aware of is your consciousness. Anything you're unaware of is your unconscious. And come on in, fine. Okay, I'll just let you sit down. So I'm just explaining about the brain and the fact that we've got two aspects to it. The unconscious, or the unaware bit, and the conscious. I deliberately don't call it subconscious, because sub means under. And when I've explained things in a few minutes, you'll realise that the bit that works in the background is not under your consciousness, it's way, way above your consciousness. Okay, it's the bit that taps into our spiritual side and everything, right? And that's not anything I'm going to go into today, because there's so many different variations of how that works or what it works, or you know, so people talk about the higher self and everything else, and who knows whether it's part of us or whether it's external to us. I don't know, and it doesn't matter because it exists and it runs us. So the conscious bits we're aware of is when we choose to do something, or the thing we call willpower. That's consciously saying, I don't want to do this anymore, right? I'm fed up of doing this, I won't do it anymore. And willpower doesn't seem to last. Because the moment you get distracted by something else, if you've given up smoking and you go, I'm not going to smoke again, I'm absolutely determined, and then you do it for 2 weeks, and you're stood talking to somebody in a pub, and it's a really interesting chat, and you sip your beer, and next thing you know, somebody passes you a fag, and you light it up, and you've got it smoking it, and then you go, damn, I thought I'd given up, and then you think you're back into it again. Right? Because as soon as your conscious mind holds 8 bits of data, right? Now, you don't have to be a computer technician. That is like, if I read you my phone number now, 1 digit at a time, that would fill your conscious brain up. If I then carried on talking and said, remember that number, you could either listen to me talk and remember it, or you could remember the number, but you can't do both. That's how little your conscious brain holds. Right? So your conscious brain is like the captain of a ship. It goes forward, steam ahead, whatever, and then everything else goes, and it does all the things. You know, the stoker goes, well, we better put a bit more coal on, and somebody else goes and paints the deck and everything else. Right? So we only have a conscious mind to make us different from animals, just going out on instinct, killing, eating, reproducing. Otherwise, we do that. So our conscious brain is the bit there that we get to decide things. Now, the problem is we only get to decide what we haven't already got a program for. Right? If you've already got a program for it, you don't need to change gear. It's on automatic. Right? Your engine knows when you need to go in second gear, so it puts you in second gear. If you want to override that, you have to think about that to actually put it in manual to go, right, I'm going to do second now. I'm going to leave it while it really revs up before I put it in second because I want to get around that corner fast. But most of the things we do on automatic. That's your unconscious mind, and it goes, I've got a program for that. Right? So as soon as you feel anything, you see danger, it goes, oh, right, we've got a program for that. Jump. And it gets you out of the way. If you had to, if you're in an accident situation and something happens, or you're driving down the road and the car comes at you, you don't go, oh, shall I turn that way? Oh, shall I turn that way? Shall I brake? You haven't got time for all that. You do exactly what is needed in that second. In that split second, there's a program there that weighs absolutely everything up, does all the maths, and it goes, right, we're turning this way. And you do it without thinking. But you do that for virtually everything you do. It goes, oh, we got a program for that. So if you're anxious or depressed or sad or whatever, and that's your normal mode of being, it just looks for things that brings on that sadness or that anxiety or that depression. You're constantly on the lookout for it. So I'll give you my take on how you get those different things. Normally, as a child, and I used to say this is 100% my clients, and the other day I wrote it down on a blog and I put 100% my clients, this is what happens. It's always a child that something happens to them. And then the next day somebody came and they were third child when it started. So never say never, but in the main, as a child, something happens to us and we find it traumatic. Somebody says something, somebody might actually hurt us, it might be something really serious like abuse. But in that moment, we're either terrified or incredibly angry, and our body fills up with chemicals, and we just don't know what's going on. We've never felt that way before. We can't control it, and it's that mixture of feelings. It's like, well, I can't control the situation. I can't control me. I don't know what's happening. I've gone all red in the face. My heart's pulsing like mad. You know, I think I'm going to die any second. And in that moment of trauma, we have to make up a program that says, what if this happened again? All right. So we make a program up, because we haven't got a program for that at the moment. So we make up a program that says, I don't want this to happen again, and how do I avoid it? So something happens, and you go into this trauma. And for some people, this will lead to them going, right, I want to fight, or I want to run, right? You've heard of fight or flight. That's exactly that moment. Now, what tends to happen is the brain is separated into for the sake of this argument, I'm going to say three different bits. One is your logical brain, which can go, oh, what shall I do? Well, if you're in a trauma, it's already bypassed that because it's gone, don't know what to do. Right? The next bit down is your fight or flight. So that goes, right, shall I punch it on the nose or shall I run off and hide behind a tree? Right, and that's a different bit. And the last bit is your prehistoric, is your reptilian bit of your brain. If it gets to fight or flight and you don't make a decision, it goes, well, stay there then, freeze, pretend you're dead. Okay, and in that moment of pretending to be dead, you actually don't mind if you die or not, because it shuts off your feelings. And we know this is depression. This is where depression comes from. Depression is not an imbalance of chemicals in your brain. The imbalance of chemicals in your brain is from depression. Right? They keep getting it wrong. So if you're on tablets for depression, they're trying to put the chemicals into your body that you're not making. You're making different ones. So they should be giving you something to help you make that chemical, not giving you the chemical. Right? This is where medicine and I fall out. Okay. So if you get that far as you get into your reptilian brain and you go, oh, I'll stay here and I'll pretend I'm dead, and then whatever it is will get past me and then we'll all be all right. So my idea of depression is a bit like an invisible cloak that's made out of a sack. And you pull it up and you're in this darkness and you tie it up at the top and nobody can see you. And you hide in there without any feelings whatsoever, just in case an elephant treads on you or something. So you're in there and you're safe because nobody can see you. And also, if something happens to the sack and you've got no feelings, it doesn't matter, does it? So that's what you're doing. You're hiding in this sack. And you pull the little joint down at the top and you peer out and you wait for the danger to go. And then gradually you open up this thing and you come back into the world again. And if you're regular depressive, what will happen is your unconscious mind will look for a trigger that goes, there's danger out there. You won't be aware of it because it's happening in your unconscious. So it looks around, it's constantly looking for this danger again, it's trying to help you escape it. It's constantly looking for this danger. If you constantly look for something, that's exactly what you find. You don't find everything else. You don't find happiness looking for sadness. You don't find happiness looking for danger. You find danger when you look for danger and sadness when you look for sadness. Right? And this carries on with your belief system then. Not only that, if you've had a trauma and you've gone into that place, particularly if it's somebody who loves you or you should take care of you or whatever, who's told you something or hurt you or whatever, there's all this confusion there and you don't know quite how it all works. And it's the very person that shouldn't have told you that. So we have this lack of self-worth. And as soon as we get that lack of self-worth, that's the bit I always track down to help people. As soon as I find that first instance of self-worth, I help that person deal with it, and it goes. Whether they've had it 30, 40, 50, I think 63 years is the longest somebody's had anxiety for that I've helped. Right? But I've never not been able to help anybody. As long as they stay for my full session, I help them. And I guarantee I'll help them. And because of that, it's made me really look at what I do and how I do it. Because I do that for absolutely everybody, regardless of the circumstances. So, the depressive one is you go into this thing, you go into this self-worth, and you hide away. Because it's in the reptilian bit of your brain, you notice reptiles don't hang out together. Right? They're quite solitary creatures. And because we get in that reptilian bit, we then cut off all social aspects. So when we're in that dark sack, we not only don't want people to bother us, we just don't care if they exist or they don't. Right? We want to push them away all the time and be to ourselves, because we can't explain what's happening anyway. And the only issue with that is we get a lot of healing from other people. There's lots of healers out there today. And most of it is because of the social interaction they're having with you. the fact that they touch you or the fact that they care for you, even though they've never met you before, is part of the process. If we don't socially interact, we die. It's as simple as that. You have a baby that's born in an orphanage and nobody touches it, it can die of not being touched. Even if it's fed and watered and everything else, if it's not actually held or hugged or cuddled or loved, it will die because it's just not nourished. So we tend to push everybody else away when we're in that depressed state. So if we go back up the brain as well, and we go into fight or flight. In fight or flight, there's the social element is still there with it. But in that moment of like, right, am I going to have to fight or can I run away? We invent anxiety. It's a nice little program. Anxiety and depression are nice little programs invented by you for you to keep you safe. That's how they start off. When you've had them 30, 40, 50, 60 years, you don't want them anymore. And they're not doing what they were originally designed for. But at first, there's this fight or flight bit. And you're just overwhelmed with this thing. And you don't know quite what to do. So you learn to become hypervigilant. And this is all anxiety is. You know something's going to go wrong. And if you can spot it early next time, you'll catch it. You'll miss out on it. You'll be able to avoid it. Right? So I'm going to bring into play my mythical anti-Doris. Right? My mythical anti-Doris used to hit me around the head. And she had little old lady perfume on. Right? So as soon as she came into the room, she would crack me at the back of the head while I was least expecting it. So if I now smell that perfume, I can go anti-Doris. And a split second later, I can go... And if she comes in and she tries to hit me head, it'll be down there, right? And that's all it is. You're actually looking out for this thing that is going to happen, but because it's in your unconscious mind, you don't know what on earth it is. But you know something bad's going to happen any minute now, right? And you keep looking out for it. And you become like this. And it's like, something bad's going to happen, something bad's going to happen. And eventually it will, won't it? And everything you notice is the things that goes wrong. But we also get to the stage where somebody tells us something nice, because we've lost our self-worth and we don't rate ourselves much, we can't expect other people to rate us either. So when somebody tells us something nice, we go, oh, not me. You know, oh, they go, that's a lovely dress. Oh, I've just thrown this on. It's back at a wardrobe job, you know. 10 bob from Woolworths. And we do all that sort of thing. We don't just say thank you, which is quite a normal thing. Now, I want you to all do this now. I want you to imagine. So just put your hand out for a minute and put something in it of value that you'd like to give me for giving you a really good talk today, right? Okay? You've spent hundreds on this. Well, I hope you spent thousands, but you've spent hundreds of pounds on it. Okay? And you're going to give me it now and go, Stephen, that is the best talk I've ever heard, and I want you to have this present. Okay? So all at once, I want you to put your hands out with that in your mind. You've spent a vast fortune on this. You've looked around everything on the internet to find something specifically for me. So just think of something I might like. Okay? Now put your hand out as though you're giving me that, and I'm going to take them all at once. Okay? So hand me that. With that in mind, how much time and effort you've put into it. Okay, I'll take them off you. Thanks. Okay, right, now I'm going to carry on with my talk, and you're all going to go, the bugger, what's he doing? I spent a lot of time and effort on that. Right, that is how everybody you've ever rejected feels. Right? Every time somebody said, you look nice, or you, oh, have you lost a bit of weight? And you go, no, I've put 5 pounds on. That's how they feel. And if it's, that's all right if it's a stranger, because that's just the once. If that's your partner and you do that every day, how long before they stop giving you compliments? Not long, is it? And then we moan, why don't you give me compliments anymore? Or we'll say things like, do you love me? And they're busy doing something, you go, but do you love me? I'm with my mates, I'm playing darts. But do you love me? Yes! Well, say it like you mean it then. Okay. If you love somebody and they love you back, you never have to ask them if they love you. They'll show you in each and every way. But if you keep pushing them away, they will eventually drift off. So I have another fictional character for you, little Johnny, right? He's been in an orphanage all his life. And these people come round one day and say, "Little Johnny, we love you. You're coming to live with us and our children. And we're going to love you like one of our own." And he goes, "How can you? You've only met me twice." And they go, "No, we do. We love you absolutely." So they take him home. And he's got a nice room and everything. She'll be really pleased. He's away from the orphanage. And he knows that people who love him always abandon him. His parents must have loved him and they abandoned him. So these people, they're saying they love me. That means they'll abandon me. So now what he does is, instead of trying to be nice and pleasant to stay in this beautiful house, he now starts dropping things. Just leave that on, darling. That's, yeah. Well, it's a condensation thing. Yeah, and we're told to keep it on. So he goes there, and the first day he's washing up. He didn't really want to anyway, so he drops a plate on the floor. And then there's this loud crash and everybody rushes in and they go, "Oh, have you dropped a plate?" And he goes, "Yes, you don't love me now, do you?" And they go, "Yes, of course we do. You've only dropped a plate, for goodness sake." And he can't understand that. So the next day he breaks a vase. And then they go, "Yes, of course we love you. It's fine. It's just a vase. It's not." So about 3 weeks later, he burns the house down. And they're all stood outside in their dressing gowns. And he goes, "Do you love me now?" And they go, "We do, but you're going back to the orphanage because we would like to be able to sleep at night and not fear for our lives." And he goes back to his dormitory and he smiles because that fits in with his belief system that if people love you, so they must have loved me because they've rejected me now. And anybody here has got anxiety, that's what you're doing all the time. You keep rejecting people. And the problem is as well... that sometimes you're carrying over this learning that you didn't get when you were younger. And when we're young, we learn in the main that we can do anything and it pleases most people because it's quite amusing and we're a small child and we sort of get away with anything. But if there's anybody in your family surrounding, typically before you're 6 years old, if you're surrounded by people who, yeah, it's fine, whatever you do, it's fine, but there's one person there that ignores you or you just can't find a way to please them in some way, shape or form. So a typical scenario would be you go home with a bright orange blob on a bit of paper in crayons and you show it to your mum and your mum goes, "That's wonderful. Is that the sun?" And you go, "No, it's you, mummy." And she goes, "Oh, wonderful." And it goes up on the fridge, right? And dad comes in and he's had a hard day at work and he just wants to sit down for 5 minutes. No kids jumping on his, he just wants to relax. And you go and jump on his knee. And, he should be glad to see you, but he's tired. "Oh, get off. Catch me later, I'm busy. I just want to sit here, I just want a cup of tea, I want to settle in." You don't understand that. So you start to see one person as, there's a person I can't please. Now, as you start to work out what rules are, up till about the age of six, you don't work with rules. You just observe everything around you and you copy it. And you assume that's how life runs. When you get to about six, you get a bit more discriminating and you start to go, "That's how life runs, but I don't want a partnership like that. I don't want to live in poverty. I don't want this and that." This is why you can have two kids brought up in a household. One will go one extreme and one will go the other. So if you're brought up by drunkards, one will never touch drink and the other one will drink themselves silly. Because one's gone, "I never want to be that," and the other one goes, "That's how it is." So about the age of six is when you start saying, "Why, mummy?" And as any mummy will know, that's very annoying. Because whatever answer you give, you'll get, "Why, mummy?" There you go, "I've just told you." And what's happening is, what they really want to say is, in what special circumstances and parameters surround this thing that you're telling me to do? Because next time you ask me, instead of having to ask me, I'd like to have done it before you asked me. If I knew what the rules were, I could do it, right? And you wouldn't have to tell me. And that's all that's happening. So you start to learn about things. But some things we don't learn about. So the one thing we don't learn then is how to please this person. So we go through life, and if it is your father and you get to a teenager, you start falling out then. And then you probably get thrown out of the house at 16 and on your own. And then you'll get a partner who is exactly like dad. Right? And the theory is you're trying to learn how you please people who are awkward. Because once you know that, you'll know how to please everybody. Because you know how to please mum, you just draw with an orange crayon, and she likes that. Okay, but you don't know how to please dad. I'm just using mum and dad, it could be the other way around. So we always have this awkward person in life that we're trying to work out the rules. Now, we're all adults here now, so what we should learn is there's always an exception to the rule. Right? As soon as you get that in your head, you don't need to try and please everybody. There's just some miserable beggars out there, aren't there? Hey? And they'll be a miserable beggar for the rest of their life. And it's nothing to do with you. It's nothing to do with you. And this is the thing, we are bothered about what other people think about us. And we shouldn't care. It's all right when you're learning all these things and you get to be just before an adult that you are bothered, because there's repercussions for everything. You do something wrong, you know, I used to get a smack at the back of the legs and things. Or you get grounded now, don't you? Or other thing, or electronic things taken off you. So there's different ways of punishment. But when you're an adult, there aren't those punishments. So we tend to start punishing ourselves for it. So we have all these rules in our head that we have to meet up with. And we set these standards for ourselves. And most of the people I deal with are on the borderline perfectionists. You know, somebody the other day said, I'm really good at everything I do. I give it 110%. I said, well, you're pretty bad at maths, because you can only give things 100%. That's all you can give it. You can't give it 110. Your 100% might be better than everybody else's 100%, but it's still 100%, right? That's all you can give it. So people make all these rules up. And then we have a head full of shoulds, musts, have tos. And unless you analyse that and go, why do I have to? Why must I do this? Why should I do that? Right? It's all rules that you picked up along the way. And it might be pertinent to you, it might not. If it's to do with your job, oh, I have to do this by tomorrow, that's on somebody else's instructions. But we do it for ourselves. So I don't have a to-do list, I have a ta-da list, right? And I only put things on it I'd like to do. And I put, I would love to mow the lawn, right? Now, this is entirely different to, I have to mow the lawn today. Right? You get to the end of the day, busy, 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 you haven't mowed the lawn. You're now annoyed that you haven't mowed the lawn. And then the following day it gets moved over to the next list and you go, I have to mow, oh, I've got to mow the lawn today. Like I needed a haircut last night, didn't I? And you do this and every day you put it back on your thing. When you finally get to this point where you've got an hour to mow the lawn, you go out and you're really annoyed mowing the lawn. Right? You go out, oh, I do this bloody thing, and then I've got to do this and that. If you put, I love to mow the lawn when I get chance, right? If it moves over to the next day, you'd still love to do it when you get chance. The next day, I'd still love to do it when I get chance. And then you finally get to do it, and you love doing it because you're out in the fresh air and you're pushing a lawnmower around. Right? If you're going to do something, enjoy it, because it'll still take an hour up or whatever. And I said to somebody the other day, if you're going to do something, even if you don't like it, be the best at it you can, or find a way of enjoying it. If you have to shovel shit, be the best shit shoveler in the world. Right? Because why not? You're there doing it. You can either hold your nose and go, oh, and it seems like 12 hours, or you can spend an hour just cleaning it up and go, look at that, it's spotless now. Right? It really doesn't matter. And my favourite word of the moment is significance. Because I was reading something in a book and it was just about significance. And I suddenly twigged that every single one of my clients, the issue is never around what happened to them, right? And they've had some pretty appalling things happen to them. It's the significance they now give it. right? It's how they feel about what happened to them. This is why if you get in a war zone and two people come away from the same scene, the same thing that happened, one might have post-traumatic stress disorder and the other one won't. Because one will give it this significance of, oh, if only I'd been 10 yards further forward, I'd have been blown up. Or if only I'd been 10 yards back, I could have rushed in and saved them. Or I could have. And of course, there's no answer to that, is there? Well, perhaps you could, perhaps you couldn't. You'll never know. And anything we ask ourselves, it's an open-ended question. You never get an answer to it. My other favourite word at the moment is why. And a lot of people talk about, well, ask yourself why. Well, why is a good question sometimes, but I don't like it much. Because if you ask why, you'll come up with a list of excuses. Why didn't I do that? Oh, well, I had this and I had that and I had that. You know, why did that happen? Well, you'll never know, most things. If you've come to the end of a relationship with somebody, and I've been with people who finished with me, and I've finished with people, the relationships where you finish with them are easier to get over, because you've logically thought, I don't want to be with them anymore, it's not good, I'm not going where I want to be, and therefore you end it. And at that ending, it closes itself off, because you've got the answer. If somebody finishes with you, particularly if they just run off one day and you don't see them again, you have no idea what the answer is. And if you keep looking for that answer, you'll just keep going over and over that again as like, oh, what happened? Was it me? Was it them? Did I find somebody else? What was it? Oh, what? And you do all that forever. And the thing is, does it matter? They're not with you. We're all running from the past, and the only thing we can predict our future with is what we know already. It's so difficult to predict what's going to be happening in the future. In fact, nobody can do it. You can get a rough idea, and in fact, people here today will give you a view of where you might get to if you follow all the paths that you're currently thinking of following. But if you change any of those paths, you won't get to any of the predictions that you've had today. If you suddenly change, suddenly all that changes. And every client I have ever had, I say, you're sat here now in that chair. I want you to accept the fact that you're here now and the rest of your life will be lived from when you move out of that chair. And if you think, oh, well, I should have been with somebody else, or I should have been a multimillionaire by now, or I had a multimillionaire, or was a multimillionaire, and now I'm not, and I should be again, you're not actually setting off from the right place. You're setting off from over there in your mind somewhere, right? And whilst you think you're somewhere else, you can never follow directions and get somewhere, because you're just setting off from the wrong place. So the first left turn you take, you're off track, right? You have to set off from where you are now, and know, not what you want, but how you want to feel at the end of it. And this is the law of attraction. It's not about saying, it's not about specifics, like a lot of people will tell you. If you do a thing and say, right, in 2 years' time, I want this fantastic silver BMW soft top. It has to have a stereo recorder. It has to have, and it has this, and you bolt on all these different bits. The chances of that happening are really small now, because the amount of that car that's made is really small. If you say, in 2 years' time, I want a car that is so much fun to drive, that when I sit in it, I just feel like this is it, I've arrived. And anybody else who sees me in it is jealous of it. And it's just wonderful to drive, and it can go on rough roads, and it can go on smooth roads, and it's short enough to park, you know, that'll be lovely. Now you can have one of those, right? Because somehow you'll get one. It might not be an expensive one even. But now you've actually focused on what you want, not all the details. Sometimes we just have to do that bit. We have that one step in the right direction, and that's all we need. When kicking my stand. Let me go on holiday. We don't go to the airport and go, oh, let's see. Look at all things. Yeah, oh, there's a flight to Magaluf. Oh, yeah, we'll have that. Because you'd have the wrong clothes and packed in your case, wouldn't you? We actually decide where we want to go and how long we want to go for. And even then, when we go on it, we'll get there and see certain excursions and things that we wouldn't have wanted to plan back when we were at home, because we might want 3 or 4 more days sat on the beach before we go on that excursion. But while we're there, suddenly there'll be these opportunities present themselves. And life is just like that. The more open you are to it, the more you can actually relax into it and accept what comes along each day. Because we have this moment. This moment you're in now is called now. And when you leave here today, it'll still be called now. But it'll be a new moment, right? But everything back this way is called the past, right? Over and done with. Nothing you can do about it. Nothing you can do about the consequences of it, right? You are where you are here today because of what you did there. And you've learned what you learned today because this is where you are. So everything you've ever done in your life brought you to this room now. Isn't that good? Hey? Just imagine the chances now of us tracing that back for all of you. You know, even when your mum and dad had you. You know, going like, God, that was just so they could go to Stephen's blooming talk. Hey? Isn't that good? So everything you've done in your life has brought you to now. And all your future, you cannot predict it unless you're going to predict exactly the same as you've got now. You can't predict a better future than you have now. You have to make now the bit that you want in the future. Right? Enjoy this very moment. Enjoy every moment of every day. Because it might be a last moment. You just don't know. One of the most positive people I know is called Karen Smith. She lives in Australia. A few years ago, her and her husband went to Bali on a fantastic holiday. The day the bomb went off in Bali, her husband was killed outright. She barely escaped with her life and was in hospital for years. And she is now the most positive person I've ever heard of. And she just treats everything as in the now, because you don't know what happened tomorrow, good or bad. All you have to rely on is the fact that you will deal with it. And you'll deal with it to the best of your abilities. Just have that faith in yourself. So we're coming back here to self-worth. Self-worth is how much you rate yourself. Right? It's nothing to do with anybody else. That is your rating of you. And if you want 10 out of 10, you can give yourself it now. Right? You can be 10, you can be 100% now. Whatever your name is, just go, I'm 100% of me. Right? And if some people don't like that, that is tough. Because what other people think about you is none of your damn business. So there'll be, whatever you do, however nice you are. In fact, all my life, I've been called too nice. I'm the only bloke on the planet, I promise you this, and you'll believe me when you hear me, I'm the only bloke on the planet ever to have been dumped for buying too many flowers. Which apparently is 5 bunches in 4 weeks. Went out with somebody who said they liked flowers. I was quite well to do at the time and a good job. And every time I saw the flowers, I just bought another bunch. And I actually got an email going, you're too nice for me. You're gone. Can't, you keep buying me flowers. I was like, oh, okay. So even when you do really good stuff, people criticise that. If you do bad stuff, people criticise it. All right? But they'll criticise it based on them, not on you. So we all know people who tell tales about everybody. The local gossip tells stories about everybody. And in fact, if you listen to it for long enough and you're the first one out the room, who's going to be talked about next? You. And in fact, they'll get into your confidence, so you tell them something really intimate and then it'll be around the village next day. Right? So that's not a nice person, right? And now you think about anybody you know who's not too nice, but really nice. Just think of that person now. Have they ever said anything bad about anybody? Huh? Because that's the definition. If you're nice, you're nice to everybody and about everybody. And if you're horrible, you're horrible about everybody. So why should we care what they think? Because their thoughts are their thoughts. I had a woman who came to see me on a regular basis, mainly for a chat, but mainly to sort of offload all the stuff. And each week she'd fallen out with a new person. And it was always their fault, and it was always this problem. And she would just say things like, well, I know what they're thinking. And I would say, you don't. You don't know what they're thinking. And then each week she would tell me what they thought. And it was always the same. You're a horrible person, right? Everybody thinks I'm a horrible person. And I kept saying to her, no, you think you're a horrible person. Because you can't read other people's minds. If you look at somebody and think, oh, I think they think I'm horrible, that's because you think you're horrible. Doesn't mean you are horrible. So this carried on for several weeks where I kept doing the, no, that's your head, reaching out, pretending it's her head, and then bringing it back as though she said it. And in fact, you also twist all the words they say so it matches that they're saying something horrible. And if they said something nice, you'd go, what do they mean by that? Because it would confuse you for a while, because you would go, well, I don't get that. Right? And it would confuse you. So after a few weeks of this, and she starts saying to me, I know what you're thinking of me. And I used to go, no, you don't, because I'm a therapist. I'm actually interested in what people say, and I don't judge them by it. I just have some more information to work on. So I think about people entirely differently to most people. So every time I'd say, well, what do you think I'm thinking? And she'd tell me, and I go, no, you're wrong. Wrong every time. So one week she came and she thought, got you this time. Big smile on her face. I went, what are you smiling for? And she said, I can prove you wrong. I went, okay. So I said, what's happened? She said, somebody the other day told me I'm horrible. So that proves it, doesn't it? And I went, I could do. So I said, just think of your friend, your best friend who's nice, really, really nice. And she said, yeah, okay. I said, well, get her in mind then. I just think if she's said anything horrible about anybody. She said, no. I said, well, that's why she's nice, isn't it? Yeah. I said, okay. So to say something horrible about somebody, you'd have to be horrible, wouldn't you? Yeah. So what did that woman tell you again? That I'm horrible. So I said, so that wasn't you reading her mind, was it? And then bringing it back to yourself. She told you you were horrible. So whose brain did that come from? She said, hers. So she says you're horrible, so who's horrible? She said, she is. And I went, so how are you going to prove me wrong? And that's what happens all the time. Whatever we think about ourselves, we think everybody else thinks it about us. Because how could we think any different? If you don't like you, how can you imagine somebody else loves you? Is it possible to think that? To think that, you'd have to be more loving towards yourself. So you don't believe it, you don't trust it. And if you don't believe and trust it, you push them away, push them away, push them away. And eventually, when they disappear, you have that inner smile that goes, I knew they didn't love me. Right? So, how many people are you pushing away? Okay, so this is about escaping the past, and we've not got many moments to spare. So, I don't think they'll be dashing in, will they, for the next group? Who wants to do a little bit of a journey for 5 minutes? Just to close your eyes and go into it? Are you happy to do that? Yeah, are you okay with that? Yeah, okay. So all I want you to do is close your eyes, and I'm just going to take you on a bit of a journey. Can everybody hear me all right with that thing going in the background? Yeah. Okay. So just get yourself comfy. Now, I just want you to imagine we're outside a beautiful art gallery. Just imagine the building, massive building, most beautiful building, 3 or 4 steps up to it. And you're outside that building with me, and I'm going to lead you in, and there's a special thing inside for you. So as we go in through these massive wooden doors, and what you can see is a corridor one side with no doors off it, And the other side has the doors off to all the different rooms. And on that massive corridor on the left-hand side there, I take you halfway down the corridor, and as we turn and face that wall, there is a really long canvas on it. On the left-hand side of that canvas, it's all filled in. On the right-hand side is a beautiful, pure white canvas that's not been painted on yet. And in the middle is a ribbon, the colour of your choice. Just a thin ribbon hanging down. And when you look at the left-hand side, I don't have to say anymore, because you can see this picture is made up of a collage of everything that's happened to you in your life. It can be pictures, or it can be painted on there, it can be electronic board if you like. Just imagine all those pictures of you up till now. And all those pictures are the same size. And on there is nothing that's indifferent or every day. So that it doesn't have on there what you had for breakfast 10 years ago. But it does have everything you've ever thought about, that you've gone back in your memory to. Bad things, sad things, but beautiful things and good things and enjoyable things. Everything's on there. So just see all the different colours and hues and tones. And some areas have a real darkness in them when bad things have happened. And some are light and vibrant, and some are just nice pastel shades. But that whole of that left-hand canvas represents your life up until now. And that thin ribbon in the middle represents today. And at the end of the day, you'll fill in that one line down there that will be a representation of today. All the good things, anything that bothered you, can all be put on there. But from now on, you can start to add things that you really want to and miss off things you don't want on that painting. The other thing that can happen is, I want you to look in front of you and see a pastel shades of colour blocks. You can have them. You can have vibrant coloured, you can have pastel shades, you can have black and white. You can have anything you want. All new sets of paints there. You don't have to complete the right-hand side of the canvas the same as the left-hand is. You can if you want to. This is totally your choice now. How that canvas has been painted so far, a lot of it was not your choice. You can now change all that. You can actually put a wash of colour on the right-hand side if you want to. On mine, I've painted it a beautiful bright yellow to remind me of the sunshine that comes up every day, and to remind me to look for all the good things that happen in the day. And on the left-hand side, you can go to it, and anything that really bothers you, treat it like the screen on an iPad or something, and take your fingers each side and shrink it down. Make it smaller and smaller and smaller. Because whilst you can't change what happened, you can change how you feel about it. And as soon as you change those images, you'll change the meaning and the significance of them. So wherever you want to go on that painting, you can shrink it down and darken it. Or you can add light to it. You can paint it over with white if you want. You can do whatever you want, because these are your old memories. You've already had the learning from them. And any of the really good memories, just bring one up now and open it up. Spread your fingers across. In fact, spread that across some of the old memories you don't want. And make it bigger and brighter and bolder. And just feel how good it felt on that day and how beautiful it was to be there. And just remember, you can do this anytime you like. Just by doing what I've done today, just sitting down nice and gently for a few minutes. Imagine going into this art gallery and going up to that painting and changing it. And now we'll concentrate on the right hand side. That right hand side is beautiful, clean, pristine. If you want to have a better life, what I'd like you to do is, at the end of each day, I'd like you to look for at least three things that have happened that day that were really good and enjoyable. Things you liked, things you've learned from. Even if you had a terrible day, what did you learn? Put those pictures up there. Because when we learn from bad things, we learn how to avoid them next time. And so as you stand on that middle line, you get the chance now to take all the brushes that are in there, all those old, they've got all the old paints on everything, and dip them in that jar and swirl them round and pull each brush out separately and clean it and clean it and clean it until you've got beautiful, clean, pristine brushes there. You've got a whole new set of palette paints. You've got clean water there. You can paint this new painting on the right-hand side the rest of your life. Each and every day you can fill that bit in. So you need to plan what you want out of life, not what you don't want out of life. Because when you plan where you don't want to go, that's where you end up, because that's what you're concentrating on. So think about what you want out of life. Not what you want from physical things or the person you're with, but how you want to feel in the future. Get a good image of that now, of how you want to feel, how positive you want to be, how you want to enjoy every day, how you want to help others, just by your very example of smiling and feeling good about yourself, will just encourage so many others to break free from their past and go forward to a future that they want. This is all possible for you now. All you have to do is paint this thing every night with at least three things that are good that happened during the day. And we're finished now in front of the picture. I'm taking you off to the gallery, to the end, to the shop. And in there, I buy you a copy of that canvas. And you can take that with you wherever you want. Roll it up and put it under your arm. And then as soon as you've got that canvas under your arm, I want you to come back into the room. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, wide awake and alert. With your canvas. Okay. Now, a few days ago, somebody came to see me. And they said, we were talking about bad things. And I said, oh, you know how bad things come in threes? We've heard all this, haven't we? We've all heard bad things come in three. So something bad happens and then you go, oh, crikey, there's going to be another bad thing happening soon. And then we're looking forward to the third one. We're going, I'd like to get the third one out of the way soon. Oh, Fred's died. Oh, there it is. Right? And it's like, oh, misery, misery, misery. Now, there's no rule in the world that when you've had the three, you can't have a fourth one. But we don't call it fourth one. We go, one. Be another one soon. And then we carry on and we keep doing threes, right? So you can see from my example that if it doesn't stop a fourth one coming straight away, then it can't be a rule. So I want you to take that rule out of your head and we're going to fill it with a different one, because I can tell you this is true. Good things come in threes, right? So when something good happens to you, he's with me already, you go, I wonder what the next two things are. Right? You are now looking out for good things to happen to you. So when the next thing happens, you go, yeah, second good thing. Oh, there's going to be another one yet. And you get more, even more excited. And then you get the third one. And then you go, hey, and you know how this works. You don't get a fourth one, but you get started again with one. So you've always got something to look forward to. Isn't that better? Wasn't that worth your entrance fee already? Okay. So, before you go, if you'd like to fill in the prize draw certificates and leave them with Trudy, I've been Stephen Blake, and you've been a very lovely audience. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.